Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGNR. A little bit later, Andrew Herman will stop by. You know, Andrew is an editor at DNA Info in Chicago and talks about openings and closings. A couple of things on the docket. One is a reopening, I guess, of an Aldi up on Montrose. They had shut it down, rebuilt it, and they thought they'd be back in 6 months, maybe 9 months. It's been longer than that, but they are reopening next week. So we'll talk about a little bit of the history of Aldi and all of that. And also, get this, in all of Chicago, there is one predominantly black-owned bank. They got a couple branches, one in Bronzeville, and Andrew will be here to talk about that as well a little bit later. It's Tuesday. Terry Savage will stop by. She's not usually around on Tuesdays, but we've got some scheduling issues. So Terry will talk about what's going on in the world of finance and all of that. Orion Samuelson, I don't know if you're still there, but I'm intrigued by this Tesla story.
Well, I am too. Yeah, I was surprised when I saw it this morning that their market capitalization is now exceeding that of General Motors.
And so what does that mean? Because their sales certainly aren't close.
No, they're not close. And there is concern whether or not that Model 3 sedan, which will be for sale at a price that a lot more of the public can afford, may not be ready for launch. There's concern over that happening. So, you know, you look at Elon Musk, he's flying people into outer space. He's building electric automobiles. Kind of an unbelievable character.
Yeah, well, you know what? And that's a really good point. I think we need people like that who are dreamers and more than entrepreneurs. But, you know, they lift us and move us beyond. But, you know, explain for me just the finance of it, I guess. He's got all this money. What's he going to do with it? Because he's got to find a car that people are going to be able to afford to buy, I guess, right?
Well, I would guess a lot of the money will go into battery research because, you know, that's the one drawback. We're even talking about airplanes being battery powered. And the big drawback is the battery and the weight of the battery. So I would guess a lot of the dollars that he has available at this point will go into battery research, because the battery thing fascinates me. My cell phone, at the end of the day, you have to recharge it. I have a pacemaker in my chest that has 8 years of life left in the battery. I don't understand the battery technology we're dealing with today.
So you don't plug yourself into an outlet every night? Is that what you're telling me?
I do not, no. And actually, it has expanded in the time that this battery in the pacemaker will last. I think it was a couple of years less when they installed it a couple of years ago. And we're actually gaining battery time.
Wow. All right. Oh, well, thank you for that explanation. I appreciate it. We'll check back in with you a little bit later in the program.
Okay.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. John Najarian is on the phone line. He was just on the Halftime Report on CNBC. I don't know. Were you guys talking about Tesla as well there, John?
You bet. You bet. It was just a phenomenal quarter and a pretty unbelievable run that the stock has had in the past couple of days.
Yeah, I guess so. And so I'm interested in, you know, we're just talking to Orion about what this means. I mean, it doesn't mean they're the number one automaker in the country, but they've got the most capital. O says this money's going to go toward battery research. Is that what you see?
Research and building, acquisition perhaps, even in some areas where they can justify bringing down the costs even further. But yeah, this is a pretty incredible story. They don't have those legacy costs that General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler are saddled with. Those are ones that they, you know, clearly did need to obligate themselves to. So I'm not saying you got to do away with those at all. But that's pretty unfair in a good way for Tesla. I mean, because again, no one thought a new car maker could just come in and compete. They've done it. They've produced over 25,000 cars in a quarter now. And they obviously have a lot of believers that Elon Musk can continue that magic.
You know, and you said it's unfair, which I'm glad you made me realize, because I was kind of thinking, in a way, it's an apple and an orange. You know, we've got an electric car maker over here and we've got the traditional car makers here, but those traditionals are trying to get into the Tesla market, right? And so they have to deal with those traditional costs and all of those things that Elon Musk doesn't really have to cope with right now.
Exactly. And again, the cost of the pension alone for General Motors and Chrysler and Ford is a burden that Elon Musk will not have to address, most probably until after he is no longer with the company. Right. I mean, I think SpaceX is his real baby, as well as he's done with Tesla. I think that the future for him, if I believe what I read in his book, is really SpaceX and interplanetary distribution of human beings. I mean, he's really into that as his goal.
All right, what else?
And obviously, I think he'll accomplish it.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but what else are we looking at today? I saw Caterpillar was moving the Dow. Boeing looks like had a sweet deal with Iran. That's one of the benefits, they said, of this arms deal, or the nuclear deal, I guess I should say, with Iran from years ago, that Boeing would do well. How are those two companies doing, and what else are you watching on Wall Street today?
Well, we're watching Colgate. That might be a candidate for when Warren Buffett approached Unilever about a deal. I think the possibility of a deal between Colgate and another acquirer might be behind what's the unusual activity that we see in CL. That's the symbol for Colgate. And that's why we've been aggressively trading that one today. I think also you've got Facebook with some pretty good activity. And, you know, the technology sector, Steve, has absolutely crushed this year. I mean, it's up over 11% just in the first quarter. I think that continues, actually, not at 11% per quarter pace, but I do think that technology is where you really need to be to get the outperformance.
John Najarian, I appreciate you joining us today. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Steve.
You bet. We'll talk again next Tuesday. You can follow John on Twitter at John Najarian. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand here on this Tuesday afternoon. Andrew Herman, an editor at DNA Info Chicago, is in the studio, comes by on most Tuesdays to talk about openings and closings. Andrew, welcome.
Hi, Steve.
All right, so, two really interesting stories for me. I was fascinated by the story about the bank in Bronzeville.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've lost the name of it now. I don't have it in front of me.
Yeah, that'd be Illinois Service Federal Bank.
The only black-owned bank in Chicago.
Yeah.
So let's get there, but let's start on the north side.
Sure.
Sorry to do that to you.
Okay. You faked me out there.
with this Aldi story. Now, Aldi, when I was growing up, was known as the cut rate, you know, no labels or no information.
Sure, no bags.
Generic's the word, yeah.
Yeah.
And but they really are beloved and have this sort of endearing spot with a lot of people. And there's one up on Montrose that's finally reopening.
Yeah, so this is opening 2431 West Montrose. There's actually been an Aldi store up there for 30 years, and this is replacing a new one. And it's sort of part of a larger effort by Aldi's to rapidly expand and improve the stores. And in February, they announced that they were going to spend $1.6 billion over the next 3 years remodeling and expanding. And this is part of that project.
Do they still fit with the whole generic thing, or they're a little up from there now, aren't they?
They do. So they are, they've always been sort of attractive to the budget shopper. They are now have their sights set on the more of the middle and upper class. But they are primarily driven by private brands that they make or contract for. Their packaging looks very similar to the ones they're trying to imitate.
Sure.
If you ever go into one of their stores.
I mean, I go to Heinen's or go to Whole Foods, has its own house brand. I mean, that's just what chains do.
So Aldi's has expanded into all kinds of food. They're trying to sell more produce now. They have a whole liquor list now. They have generic, I guess we could call them generic house brand wines and beers and whatnot. But this is a very tough market, the grocery business. There were some interesting stats out recently about how people now spend more money at restaurants and bars than they do at grocery stores.
Really? Because, people just aren't. They're not cooking?
Yeah, they don't cook. So what grocery stores have been trying to do is basically sell prepared meals inside the grocery store, and so you just go by there.
That's
absolutely
true.
Get yourself already cooked chicken with the sides. And
we do that too. We do that all the time. Mm-hmm. I guess that's a great point. Do you ever work at a supermarket?
Yes, I worked at Eagle Foods in Waukegan. Yes,
because we talked about this.
Yes, we have. Yeah.
So I worked at the Eagle Foods in Bradley, and one of the cashiers from back in the day, and this would have been early '80s. I was working at Eagle when the Americans won the Olympic gold hockey medal Lake Placid, I think. So that long ago.
Yeah.
Anyway, one of the cashiers has put together a Facebook page of all these former workers. I'm just having so much fun.
Yeah.
Looking at these women who I thought were older women then, you know, because they were 30 and I was 12 or 15 or something.
Yeah. Well, back then, you know, those were all very strong union jobs and
yes,
people never left.
It was my first union job.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's but they're competing more and more out there. There's more grocery stores now than there have been in previous years. And they just, you can just drive around. You can see them all trying to gobble each other up.
All right, let's go to the bank then. Mm-hmm. This Illinois Services Federal Bank, pretty interesting to me that it's the only black-owned bank, and they are there with a bit of a mission.
Yeah, so they're at they have two places, 46th and King and 87th and King. They opened in 1934, and it's amazing that this is the last black-owned bank in the city. There used to be so many of them. There was Seaway was a big one. They closed recently. They ran into financial problems, but Illinois Service got a $9 million infusion from a Ghanaian family, and so they recently had a workshop for small businesses in Chicago, and they had some interesting stats there. They said that 26% of all businesses in the city are owned are black-owned businesses.
I've highlighted all of those numbers. I was really surprised by that.
But 4%, but only 4% that actually have paid employees. So a lot of black-owned businesses are just one-man shops.
Right.
You know, somebody trying to create a product in their homes. And when we went over there to look at the workshops, you know, we met all kinds of people. One guy was a cosmetics guy, another guy was a real estate person, and then there was a popcorn company, a guy who owns a food truck, Popcorn. He's had it since for 8 years now, and he was saying that he got the capital to get going through a black-owned bank.
Really?
And that's kind of the essential mission of black-owned banks in that for a variety of reasons, a lot of black people have a hard time borrowing money. They have a hard time getting the okay from the bank. So these black-owned banks are stepping in and trying to service that area.
Just think of that drop-off again. 26.8% of all businesses in, that's Cook County, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are
in the city.
Are black-owned. Yep. In the city are black-owned, but so many of them are sole proprietors. So when you take it to someone who's got an actual employee, only 4.3%.
Right. And so they have the entrepreneurial spirit. They're trying to break out and start their own businesses. But as I say, they really need capital. And this is not just in Chicago. Black-owned banks are down about half from what they were in 2007. There's only 23 in the city or in the country now. And the recession really hit them hard because they had so many foreclosures.
Right, right.
They had a lot of mortgages in neighborhoods that the homeowners couldn't pay. So they were kind of struggling.
That's Andrew Herman. You can read more at dnainfo.com/Chicago. Andrew, thanks for coming by.
Okay, Steve.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. We'll talk to the guys behind Foxtrot coming up later this half hour, Mike Lavitola and Taylor Bloom. I don't know if you know from Foxtrot, pretty interesting business in that they started with this sort of curated line that they would deliver to you, and then they went into brick and mortar. So it's sort of a reverse of how things normally work. They continue to expand. They'll be by to talk about that a little bit later. Terry Savage is on a phone line now. You can read from Terry and follow her website, terrysavage.com. Of course, the expert in personal finance. And I guess we've got some breaking news this afternoon, right? A resignation of a Fed president. What's up?
Juicy, juicy gossip. First of all, thank you for letting me switch from my regular Wednesday. Tomorrow's a Chicago Mercantile Exchange all-day board meeting.
You can do whatever you want. You know that.
You're so sweet. Thank you. So, boy, this, you know, not, there's a sex and money on Wall Street really make headlines, but this is the juiciest of gossip turning into reality. The Richmond Federal Reserve President, Jeffrey Lacker, announced his resignation this morning and admitted that he discussed, well, inside information with a newsletter writer about what was going to be said at the upcoming back in 2012,
right,
at the upcoming Fed meeting. And it was market moving information about the kind of purchases of bonds. It was pretty esoteric stuff. But there have been two investigations, including one by the House of Representatives and another investigation by the government. And today he announced that he was resigning because he was the source of the leak in an interview he gave to this newsletter writer. And it's a journalistic ethics thing because that newsletter was since sold to the Financial Times, and the guy that wrote the newsletter is part of the Financial Times. So it's got circles and circles. But the impact is he's a voting member of the Fed Open Market Committee, and that one of the people that decides what about the next rate increase. So that injects some uncertainty into the
Let me take a step back then. So the investigators earlier knew that this information got out, but they didn't know until today that Lacker was the guy who put it out there?
I'm going to guess out on a limb here that they were about. In fact, Lacker had said he's only 51 years old. He had said earlier that he was going to resign in 2017. So the Richmond Fed said it had a search underway and it would now accelerate it. But I'm guessing they came to him and said, you know what, you're going to be indicted. And I think or something like that, because this is really leaking insider information. I'm not sure what the legal penalties are, besides losing his job, his reputation, but maybe it depends on whether it was inadvertent or not. But for sure, someone was breathing hot down his neck, and he resigned.
All right, so tell me a little bit about, you know, I know the president appoints the chairman of the Fed, but I read in this that the Richmond Fed now will start looking for a replacement. Who chooses, or how does that work?
The board of the Richmond Fed, just like the board of the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago, chooses the president of its board. So there are 12 members to the Fed Open Market Committee. There are five rotate from the various 12 regional districts as voters on the Open Market Committee. There are 12 governors. The president of the New York Fed is always a permanent voting member of the Open Market Committee. And it just happens to, and Charlie Evans, I think we discussed that last week, our Chicago Fed president, is a voter this year. So his comments are always, you know, taken more seriously because he's one of the people impacting how many rate hikes and when. And now this is one of those five Fed president spots. And I'm not sure, and it remains to be seen, if they immediately name a new president, will he immediately start participating in the Fed Open Market Committee, or she, I would like to say, and cast a vote on the next round of rate hikes?
Yeah, you say she. It's
big news.
Yeah, well, so we'll follow that. Thanks for breaking that with us. I'm torn on which way to go, because you just said he or she. Today, I know you know, is Equal Pay Day for women, right?
That's part of the reason, yes.
So women have to work through an entire year and then through again April 4th to make up for the gap in what men make or what women make. I don't know. I mean, you certainly have been a trendsetter in the industry you're in. I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on a day like today and if you see it the same as it was, getting better, or just where we are.
Well, you know, frankly, I'm astounded that we have still statistics, which I know a number of people will argue with, but undeniably there's a gap and a statistic that says 20% less for the same jobs or women working in jobs that are become predominantly low-paid jobs, that this is still happening after all these years is just astounding to me. And I love the fact that a number of companies have gotten together to offer discounts to women in recognition just for this week or this day that women earn less for doing the same jobs or that jobs themselves become marginalized as women's jobs. Now, you know that's not the case everywhere. And we know, I mean, there are women Federal Reserve governors. Janet Yellen is the chair of it. So this is not saying that women are disproportionately locked out of the top jobs. It's just that the overall statistics are still astounding, whether it's women on corporate boards, women leading major corporations. They are the exception that we point to rather than being just what's going on that's half and half. We're half the population. And we've been going to college for a long, long time, so we should be there.
But, you know, it's also interesting because it's a sliding scale because the people of the generation beyond us have a completely different worldview than they do of my kids' generation. And so, and of my generation, it's hard for me to imagine that this happens. I would imagine it's even harder for my kids' generation to imagine that this still exists, whereas as you get older, probably some of those lifelong prejudices or attitudes are still hanging around.
Well, it's a shame that they obviously are passed down to a next generation of corporate leadership. But that's, again, a generalization. We've been patient for a long, long time. You know, I hate to be raising the flag here, but we were told that, you know, as you go through the business schools, as you go through the law schools, as you go through professional degrees, that there will be more women earning commensurate with men. And I think that, in fact, there are. But the fact that there's any gap or that jobs become marginalized is just sort of unforgivable for America. And, you know, there are a number of Scandinavian countries where that's not true. So we know something's going on here that's institutionalized this disparity.
All right. Let's go to Mar-a-Lago. You want to? Want to come with me? Let's go to Mar-a-Lago.
I'd love to go to Mar-a-Lago. I'd love to be, you know, a little chickadee on the table there watching what's going on down there
The president meeting with the president of China on Thursday and Friday. What do you think will come out of that? President's talking tough ahead of it.
It is always unwise to predict what will come out of any meeting with this president. Here's what we know. I wish everybody would realize this. Yep, we have a trade deficit with China. We import a lot of stuff. That means our economy is strong and growing and our consumers get low prices. And China takes a lot of the money it earns and turns around lending it to the U.S., buying our treasury bills, notes, and bonds, and keeping our interest rates low, financing our deficits. I'm not sure the president is aware of that, but if he starts talking tough about trade, and 22 people out in the audience are now saying, I want to have lunch with her and tell her why she's wrong. But the point I'm making is if he starts putting a barrier to entry of Chinese goods and starts talking tough on trade, it will, number one, cost consumers a lot, and number two, likely raise the cost of our deficit financing, our IOUs, and that will add to our national debt. So this is very sensitive. It's not black and white here. Terry, I hope he's sensitive to that.
All right, Terry Savage, thanks very much for joining us today. We'll talk again next week.
Absolutely.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, we have a familiar face in the studio. Mike LaVitola is one of the guys behind Foxtrot. His partner, Taylor Bloom, in the studio as well. Taylor, nice to meet you. I hadn't met you before. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And Mike, welcome back.
Great to be here.
All right, so, you know, I'll just have you guys in every, what, year or 16 months just to track how things are going.
How's Works that for us.
Let's start with where Foxtrot started and what you intended from the beginning, right? Do I remember that it started out of UFC?
It did. It started down at Booth through the New Venture Challenge. And back then it was, you know, sort of just a delivery app and has grown up a lot since then.
Well, Taylor, it was a little more than just a delivery app, right? Because, I mean, you guys were a little snooty about what you were offering, really fine products and all of that.
Right. So it was really meant to be a very curated selection.
Snooty in a very positive way.
All the good and delicious stuff.
All the good and delicious
exactly.
stuff. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So instead of like your general grocery shopping experience, it's a very pared down, curated experience. We find the best products in every product category.
And so you would send out sort of newsletters and things like that. Like this is our scotch of the month kind
scotch,
of thing?
Scotch, lots of great craft beer, wine, ice cream, that sort of stuff.
Okay. And so the connoisseur would see this. See what they wanted, and then they would order, and you guys would deliver, right?
That's right. Exactly.
Or wasn't there also the scenario where a date goes well, a girl goes home, and it's 1 o'clock in the morning or 11 o'clock at night, and all of a sudden we need champagne? You guys were the ones to deliver that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And how'd all that – and that went well for you, right? It was going very well.
Absolutely, yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So it was going really well for us. You know, when we started out, we worked with you know, existing grocery stores to source the product. And it became clear that to offer the kind of the high-end curated selection that we want, we really had to open our own retail stores.
And so part of that, too, was delivery, right? Because say that call came at 11 o'clock at night, you guys had to figure out where to get or where you were storing this champagne. Was it cold and all of that?
Which was hard to do in under an hour.
Right, in under an hour, which was the guarantee.
Yes.
And so a brick-and-mortar sort of facility lent itself to a partnership there.
Absolutely, yep.
And you started with one in Lincoln Park.
Started with one up in Lincoln Park. Then about a year and a half later, we opened up in West Loop. And then just a few months ago, relocated our Lincoln Park location.
And so now you are an app-based business that has brick-and-mortar stores. Isn't that backwards?
It's worked for us.
Yeah, a little bit maybe, but you see it in other, you know, other industries too. You know, Warby Parker, for example, is an e-commerce business that's gone brick and mortar.
I was on the phone with Warby Parker today.
Oh, great. All right.
Exactly.
Very relevant.
Yeah. And so it works for them. I mean, even Amazon has opened up a bookstore up on Southport. I don't know if that's quite the same thing.
Yeah, I haven't actually been in there yet. You've gotten a chance to go in there, haven't you?
It's a really great setup. But for us with the store kind of as our customers do, is they can, you know, see these products in person, you know, might be able to find out about some new brands or new items they didn't know existed before and walk home with them.
Well, and you guys aren't just selling brands. You're creating your own brand, right? You are a brand. So if you're out there on busy streets or in neighborhoods that people happen by, I mean, that's got to be good for business too.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, we try to make the stores more than, you know, just kind of a little corner store. So there's a great coffee shop in there. In our Lincoln Park location, you can actually have a glass of wine or beer. So, you know, the stores are a pretty fun place to hang out.
And the Lincoln Park one is on Armitage, right? Just was
correct.
Now, I was reading a story that was liquor license an ordeal for you guys, or was it pretty easy?
We follow the rules, so it ended up being pretty easy.
Well, speaking of that, too, I mean, so if I, again, want that bottle of champagne at 11, how do you get around, or how do you follow the law in making sure that you're selling to legal people? That must be a complication.
Sure. So, you know, we do some things on the front end to, you know, kind of gate people on the app. But at the end of the day, it's just carding hard at the door like you would at any other store.
Okay. So here you are, web-based, brick and mortar now. Where's the cash?
It's honestly split pretty evenly, which is really, really fun for us. So, but half our customers find us through the app, half our customers are coming into our stores, and a lot of times it's the same customer, you know, kind of using us in both those situations.
Yeah, it creates a pretty unique synergy, right? So you pull up the app, order what you want, and if you happen to be in West Loop or Lincoln Park, you can wander into a physical store, and it's the physical manifestation of the app.
So are you guys where you thought you were going to be when you started this?
It's been a fun ride. You know, the retail stores were a big kind of surprise for us, but now they're, you know, probably the most fun part of the business.
Are the retail stores expensive?
Not overly so. You know, we aren't a restaurant, so there's not a big kitchen build out that kind of has to happen. Most of the, you know, kind of expense just goes to making it like a fun, comfortable place.
And so, I mean, the web is the web, but the retail, the brick and mortar, I think would be what you have to acquire more of. Is that where your expansion is focused?
Yes, and they also kind of go hand in hand. So with more retail stores, we can serve more online customers because we're in their neighborhoods and able to get there faster. So the two kind of, you know, move in lockstep with each other.
Taylor, what's your favorite part of all of this?
Just getting to, like, just love what I do. Like, every day's
unique. No, I meant sitting here talking to me.
Oh, talking to you?
No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
No, well, you know, actually, today's my birthday, so
hey,
this is the birthday present for me to get to talk to you.
I'm sure. That's a great gift. Better luck next year. No, but so what is it about? I mean, there's that sort of joy of connecting people with the right product, or what is it that you enjoy the most?
Yeah, you know, it's really unique to get to discover all these cool new brands ourselves and then curate what we like and share it with other people.
I love looking at the website because there are some cool things and things that I wouldn't find on my own. And until you start delivering to Deerfield, I'm just dreaming. I guess I'll come down and shop on Armitage.
There you go. Yeah, come check out the store.
Mike Lavitola and Taylor Bloom. The store is Foxtrot. A couple of stores. We mentioned Armitage. Where's the other one?
In West Loop.
And what's the street? What's
Lake and Morgan.
And you can always find more Foxtrot.
Foxtrotco.com.
All right, guys. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much.